Okay, welcome to the November, the real November Amateur Radio Club meeting for the AEA Amateur Radio Club. I'm the president, Kirk Crawford, KK6KC. We don't have a vice president. We have our secretary here, Bob Lanahan, KK6WYW, who'll be presenting today. Joe Barger said he would come. He's our treasurer in 6KK, but he's not here at the moment. And so now we'll do Bob's presentation. You want to do this one first?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. This is the directional antenna that I'm going to talk about. And for you guys on the line, I'm unfolding the tape antenna. It has a very convenient way of taking the ends of each tape measure element and folding it into the body of the antenna. Pretty neat design, makes it compact. About the cover, I've got a Sherlock Holmes hat on. That's just the front and back bill. And this is about my experience doing transmitter hunting. Okay, transmitter hunting, and I think I put the date in here when I actually did it. Like Kirk said, originally I was going to present in October. So, and you guys online can follow, right? You see the charts? Take that as a yes.
Yeah, we can see your chart. And I guess you brought the actual antenna.
Correct. And so I'll go over the antenna again when I get to that, the pictures. So what I wanted to talk about was who and where I did this transmitter hunt. We actually got to build this antenna that I will be showing you. Then we did the transmitter hunting itself. I'll talk a little bit about hunting and then where you can find more information. So every spring, hams in Orange County organize an outdoor day in the park where they operate radios, find hidden transmitters, and eat lots of good food. This year's event, Antennas in the Park, was hosted by the Fullerton Radio Club. We went to the Hillcrest Park in Fullerton on Saturday, May 5th. So if you're interested and want to go to a setting that helps you build your antenna and try, they have multiple levels of hunting, beginners and advanced. This group was fantastic. So on the bottom of the page are some pictures of the park. On the left, they had a big cake. We also had other people bring their rigs. This guy here in the left middle built a radio on a board. I think it's a $160 kit. I might have information later in the briefing about it. And then on the right, just some more pictures from actual hunting and pictures when we assembled the radio. So I'm on the next page, the fourth. It took place Saturday morning. Marvin Johnston was the guy that took requests for kits so that you could build your own antenna. And we assembled and tested this special attenuator, and that's really not the right term. This is a frequency offset, and I'll get to that a little more in the picture. If you want to build the kits, you can still send your name to this guy. You can get the kit. He brought the kits to us, so we had it to build that morning. It took us about an hour to build the antenna. And if you're not an electronic technician, don't worry. There were plenty of experts to help you with it. I've seen people try to do this, and it turns into 2 hours. And that's one person to build it, and then it goes really slowly. This guy was very organized. There were plenty of Elmers to help you. So on the bottom left, you see the guy that was helping me. On the right, there was another guy that was helping the guy in orange. So this was a perfect setting. Any questions on that page?
Yeah,
Okay, so a little close-up of actually what I built. The picture on the bottom right, it's a three-element Yagi. The element in the back, i.e. closest to your hand or closest to the radio, is the reflector. The element in the middle is the driven element or the receiving element. And the element up front, I think it's called a
director.
Right, thank you. So how the antenna works. You connect and tune your HT to the transmitter frequency, and they tell you what frequencies these transmitters are on. And you can have the squelch on or off. And then you turn on this offset device, which is the picture on the bottom left, and you see the word on there. That's an offset device. And you dial the clock clockwise for zero frequency offset. Then you sweep your Yagi and you listen for the transmitter. It's beeping or it actually has a message. And there's multiple types of transmitters. And then you sweep your antenna left and right and you sort of get a middle where it has the strongest setting. And then you turn this offset and the signal decreases, and then you sweep your antenna left to right again, and you realize, oh, it's now got a little cone to it. It's much more directional. And by offsetting the frequency, you reduce the signal that goes into the antenna. And that's how you get better direction finding. And as you walk towards your transmitter, the signal gets strong again, right? And you turn your antenna like this, and you can't really tell where it is. So again, you turn this left a little to decrease the signal, and it helps you zero in on the direction of that transmitter. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Questions? Okay.
No question.
It turns out the Baofeng is one of many radios that, as you get too close, the signal comes in almost without even having an antenna. That signal is so strong, it just comes in and it overloads the front end of the Baofeng. And the Baofeng is known to not have very good front-end rejection. So Baofeng is not the best radio for doing this, because when you get within 10 feet and they hide that transmitter really well, you know it's in front of you, but you don't know where. And I couldn't find a transmitter that they'd actually put up in a bush up on a little hill, and it was right eye level. But I walked around that thing for a good 15, 20 minutes, finally found an Elmer, and he went, look, this is the problem you're having, and he showed me where the transmitter was. So other directional antennas have attenuators, not frequency offset device. So rather than shifting that frequency that's coming in off, they attenuate the signal. And they have their benefits and weaknesses. Again, the problem is when you get really close, you can't attenuate the signal through here because the signal's strong enough to just come into the radio directly. So what do? They built these fancy digital tuners. They attenuate, they show signal strength, and they provide audio on a separate channel. I ran around the course with one of those digital antennas. They're amazing. They're definitely, if you ever want to get into this hunting thing, that's the route you've got to go. Any questions on this page? Okay. So, to the actual hunt itself, they set up three easy-to-find 2-meter transmitters around the top of the course. And we were here for the guys on the net. Sort of look at the middle of the picture and then come down to maybe 4 o'clock, and there's a little, oh yeah, thank you, Kurt. That building there is actually where we set up. This long table here is where everybody gathered for the beginning of the hunt. And our transmitters were all within maybe 50 yards of this table. There was one down here, yep, one down here. And the one that I couldn't find was hidden up here on this little hill. You walk around the building, you get tons of signal strength. And that's where I found out my Baofeng had that front end problem. So this whole course was 40 acres. And that's the second part. There were 5 Fox ADRF transmitters in this course. One transmitter went berserk. and it jammed all other transmitters, all other four. So it made that day kind of difficult. But think of the transmitters being in the outer regions of this whole picture I put here. Somebody had calculated how many miles you had to walk, even if you went perfectly to each one, and they weren't in order. One transmitter squawks, then maybe the third one squawks, then the second one squawks, fourth and the fifth, and you had one in the middle jamming. So it really is kind of fun to try to figure that out. This was a very hilly place. The peak was up here at the top, and I would say it was 400 feet of elevation gain. So again, that made it kind of tricky. If you were trying to do a star to get to all these repeaters, a lot of work. So part of the race is about figuring out where you think each one is, and then going in the straightest line to pick them up, get back to the table. And on each transmitter, they have a code. You have to write down that code to show you actually got to that transmitter. Does that make sense? So there's a little tag and it tells you, yep, this is the tag for that transmitter. Then they also had one 80-meter transmitter, and that was for the folks that wanted to do hunting at 80 meters. That day, we also had a VIP ribbon cutting for the new fountain, and that was on the first picture that I showed you in the charts. So the parking was miserable that day at this park. The four pictures on the right were just some pictures of folks setting up before we started the competition. Next page.
Got a question regarding the jammer. Is it purposely put it there to jam?
Nope. It didn't. Broken. It failed. We couldn't hear that signal at the table. So the people that set up the course didn't know it was jammed until the people came back and went, hey, you know, this is... And they said, that's how it goes. So, yeah, it was not on purpose at all. Right.
So for the Fox transmitters, were those what bands were they transmitting on?
I think it was all 2 meters. I think that day was all 2 meters, except for the third one, which was 80 meters. Yeah.
So how long did the antenna work on the 80-meter course?
Did not.
Okay.
Yeah, this one did. I didn't even try. I did put the antenna tester on this, and I have a snapshot of what it looks like. It's really surprising how weird the response is of this antenna. It worked fine, but I would have never thought if I had run the antenna test before I went to this meet that this antenna would even work. So, and if I got into this, I would want to test the fancy $165 antennas to see how well they isolate certain frequencies, because this would pick up a ton of noise. And that's why they have a pattern coming off these transmitters, so you know what you're listening to and kind of where to go. But I think this antenna picks up kind of everything.
Okay.
So they published the results.
So, sorry.
Go ahead.
You're supposed to leave the transmitter where it is. If you find it, just copy information off it.
Exactly right. Yep. Because there's a race. There are at least a dozen people that are trying to do the same thing you're doing. And one of the tricks is people will change where they're going so that you don't follow. It's like Bill Wright. Look at his time. 41 minutes. He was definitely the winner. Everybody knew he was the winner and the guy to follow because he has a reputation of being the best. And so he has a pretty fancy process he goes through. I didn't find him very communicative of his process. He likes being number one, and he sort of didn't want to share, even with a newbie who didn't have a chance to keep up. So you'll see Bill got first in the 2-meter Fox 5, and that answers your question. Were they all on the same frequency? Yeah, they were at 2 meters. And 80-meter transmitter results, Bill found that in 3 minutes. So that was kind of impressive. Any questions on this one?
And what is a FOX?
That is another name for the transmitter.
Oh.
You're so, searching for the fox.
Right. It's sort of like a British fox hunt where you're on horses and you're trying to find a fox. This is...
Oh, so the list is how many did they find?
Yes. You got it. So I found two, but I didn't even check in to tell them I found two. I was pretty slow. Any questions on this result page? Okay, so if you want more information, Joe Mole, I think that's how you pronounce his name, K00V, has a page called homingin.com. And this is actually a very popular thing, the transmitter hunt. There's usually events going on every weekend. It's sort of like geocaching, if folks are familiar with that. This is just same sort of thing, only using an antenna. And you're usually competing against others. Most of them can jog the whole course to get to these antennas. I was pretty impressed. So that's it. I'm not going to review the outline again. Any questions?
I just had a comment, though, that the 80-meter... A lot of people do this on 2 meters, but the 80 meter is becoming more popular because there are some inexpensive Chinese radios that are designed for fox hunting on 80 meters. And so they're doing, and the fox hunting is, radio direction finding is very popular in Asia. And that's where a lot of the radios and stuff are from. It's very popular in Korea and Japan and stuff.
You're exactly right. I forgot about that. Yeah, they highlighted that there.
People are suggesting build the 2-meter stuff, but buy the 80-meter thing. It's pretty cheap.
Cool.
And you can play with it, too.
The first time I see these is from a forest ranger works for the National Park Service. He's tried to use that to locate a hawk. I think it was near Grand Canyon. One of those parks there that he's using it on. One comment about the tape measure. Mm-hmm. Instead of folding it, actually you can make it a lot more compact by rolling them into a little circle.
I guess you could. I haven't tried rolling to see if these...
You will need to hold it using tape afterward.
Yeah. So it turns out half is pretty good because you're really like a quarter the size by doing both sides.
But for like... traveling with it in the back, your bag, you could roll it.
Yeah.
So what do the antennas look like when they're running around with the 80 meter transmitters?
They're actually quite small.
Oh, okay.
I think they use bar antennas.
Okay. And I'll bet you if you go to this guy's webpage, he'll have a bunch of stuff on 80 meter too, because mm-hmm. they did talk about it. It's up and coming here in the States. Cool.
Were the transmitters that were hidden, were they very low power transmitters?
That's a good question. I don't remember what the power was, but relatively, because they run on a battery and they're meant to run all day.
Yeah.
So.
And you are looking for them fairly close.
It's only a few milliwatts that you're finding. They've set up. RDF courses at the Jamboree on the Air for Boy Scouts at Cabrillo a couple years ago, and we had the scouts find them, and they're really small things. But since you're close by, it doesn't need much power to find it. It was fun. The kids love finding them.
How do you get one transmitter to jam the others? I mean,
I guess they're all on 40 meters or 22 meters, and if they're all on the same frequency, because you're not changing the frequency, and one went berserk, and I don't recall this, it might be transmitting the same time as the others. And the way it's normally set, it transmits for about 10 seconds, then it's quiet for a minute. And that's what makes this hard, is you walk, and then you don't hear anything, and you're like, do I wait for this one or do I look for the other ones that have a different signal and try to triangulate so I know where I'm going when I'm done with this one?
Oh,
and the really good guys get an idea where it is. They spend that whole minute walking. So the next time it beeps, they're hopefully right there near it. But it can be really tricky if you waste your whole time listening to just one. It takes you forever. And since I was a newbie, that's what I did. I waited. I didn't try to look at the other ones when they were broadcasting. And they were set to go off every minute. So it would take 5 minutes to go through the whole cycle. Now, if one of the ones that was berserk, it might have been transmitting all the time, and it made it hard for you to know where to point. Were you listening to the berserk one, or were you listening to the one you were going after?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Did you have a map that you could, like, draw lines on or something?
No, and that's why I had this backup. You hit exactly the way. If I were going to do this again, I would know the area. I would get a topo. I would lay out maybe in advance where I thought they might hide them. And it totally makes sense that when you have a big hill, you put all your transmitters outside the perimeter. And, it just knowing your area, I think, helps a lot. And I'm sure these guys that do it a lot, they know every location they're going to. There's only so many places you can hide these things. So, yeah, Wayne brings up a great point. If you're going to do it, learn your area.
Can they use a different setup that actually tell you the direction and the signal strength?
Nope.
They have to use these.
You've got to use that antenna from the get-go. And you could probably team with somebody else if you want to and have radios and try to, hey, I think it's over here. I think it's over there. You know, it's all about fun. And the food was great. So
teaming like that kind of cheating, though, because you can send five people out and you each of you just look for one.
I'm sure the single guy would not appreciate that. Any other questions on that? Okay, the next presentation I have is, we had talked about putting a repeater up and we sort of took it off the list. I've since resurrected the idea, and that's kind of what this presentation is, to let folks know, hey, there could be a plan if we want to. So, outline people, some topics, the repeater build steps, the location, the antenna, and any questions or actions. Here's sort of the list of folks that would be involved, and I assume Kirk, at some point you might get involved there too, but so I'm kind of the one trying to build the plan. Dave Ping is the guy who has the repeater and knows what we need to do to get it up there. Albert's been around, so I've chat with him. At one point, I thought we might need Mike's help, but I don't know that we need to yet. We know from experience that Hilla does our RF testing. There may be some facility and safety folks that get involved. Do we need a phone line? So we'd have to work with those folks. And we need any network help. We would have to work with the network folks if we did. So, key topics. I think we need to build an RF description. We know that it's a 10-watt output. We know that we can use the test frequency. That's 44,688 out, 44,188 in. And we don't remember the PL tone, but it's written down. It's probably 67 or 110. Mike does not need to sign anything because anybody can use the test pair. I think we need at some point to talk about getting an okay to install the repeater. How you update the repeater is typically a phone line. You can use radios and you can use a network, but we think phone line is probably best. We assume that because the security repeater is in the same room, that they might have a phone line. But that phone line wouldn't be for our repeater. Not too hard. I talked to Albert what it takes to get a phone line, so I think that's going to be pretty easy. Is there anything we're missing? We could get an isolator, but they previously used this repeater for years and never had a problem. An isolator costs about $600.
What's the purpose of the isolator? From lightning shot or something?
No, this is actually InterMod. That front end can take another signal and then amplify that signal and then transmit. And when you transmit, it puts that energy out, and I think it creates intermodulations. And so an isolator keeps other energy from going in to the on the transmitter side and creating intermod when it transmits out. That's more than I know. That's what David kind of explained to me. Kurt, maybe you have a better feel for it.
I'm not that familiar with repeater hardware. I know we have the ones that we have the big tube things.
Yes. We have two of those. Those are part of the... I should have taken a picture of this, but I will do that next time. I'll take a picture of the setup and all the components, and I'll go through what each one does. But those are more filters to make sure that you have an input channel that we transmit in on, and then they have to very tightly filter that, and then they tightly filter the transmit out, because all they do is change over the input signal into the output frequency.
The tricky part with a repeater that is not a crossband repeater is that this is a 440 repeater, so it's transmitting at the same exact moment that it's receiving.
That's right.
That's the tricky thing about a repeater. If it's crossband, it's fine. You have two different antennas. It's one's 2 meters, one 440, but this is a real repeater that's all on the same. So you're transmitting on 446, but you're receiving on 441.88, very, very close by.
Right.
And so that's what makes the hardware expensive, difficult, heavy, big.
Right. You have a very steep filter.
At first, when we figured out we had one of these and didn't really know what the hardware was like, we were thinking, oh, maybe we could make it portable and we could use it in emergencies. And it's not small enough to make it portable.
Right.
So I think this is good. I'm curious about the output power. Are we certain that it's 10 watts, or are we limiting it to 10 watts because of that requirement for the test frequency?
I didn't ask him that. Good point, because a lot of repeaters could be like 100 watts.
Most of them are like 50 to 100 watts, like a mobile radio.
Yeah.
This 10 to 10 watts seems curious to me.
Yeah, this appears to be what it was and what it is.
Okay.
Not that he was tuning it that way, but I'll go take that action.
I'd be curious to know if that's limitation of the hardware or what.
Got it.
About it. It could very well be that on the test frequency you can only use up to 10 watts because that limits your range. I think 10 watts would probably be fine for AGO proper, but we're not going to get very far from AGO proper.
Right. Yep, good question. Okay, there are steps we need to take to get this thing operational. First is to modify the connector. He also wants to shield the cables that go to the connector. Pretty straightforward. That'll probably take an hour or two. Next, we have to program the repeater board. I think he's done that before. Again, it's sort of straightforward, so we've allocated maybe 2 hours to programming the repeater board. Then he needs to modify the radio cover for the rack. He believes there's some folks here that can do that, help him do that. That's sort of it to get the radio ready, believe it or not. Then we need to move the equipment to A8, into the air handler room, install the equipment, test the equipment. We think we probably have to have Hilla come do an RF test before we operate. And then whatever final steps we need to operate, and I have here, Hilla, is there anyone else?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No. As long as we're on the test pair.
Yep.
And stuff.
Where's the air handler room? First floor, second floor?
Penthouse.
It's the penthouse of A8. A8, yeah, that's right.
It's the part sticking up on top.
You'll see the picture coming. Okay, so a little bit about the location. It's in the air handler room on the roof of building
D-A?
I know, that's a typo. Thank you. That's a typo. Thank you. We share the room with the security repeater. That has a lot more power. I didn't ask him how much, but it could easily be 100 watt, because that's what these guys want in and around the facility. To get in that room, you walk through a facility room and a workbench, and the only time he's been able to get in is when he has a facility escort, because that is currently controlled by key to get in there. And I don't think we need to make that a pin door or anything like that. Repeaters tend to be fairly reliable. If we thought we needed to get in there a lot, maybe we could change that. But right now, I think we're good with that. There is primary power in there. There is backup power in there. And there isn't a plan to put in battery backup. But the El Segundo repeater, for example, is battery backup. It can run for about 24 hours, depending on load. And I already hit the access control. Any questions on this one?
We should have two people with keys.
If
we ultimately get access to it, we should have two officers.
That's a good idea. And if they'll let us, because it went through a facility room too, and I don't know, I'll get two keys. Okay, so the antenna. Right now it's a multi-band antenna, 2 meter, 220, and 440. It is already up, as you can see from this picture. It's on the edge of that baffling, whatever you want to call that, on these loose that don't let you see the
privacy fence.
The privacy fence, yeah. I do have the building number right there, A8. There's a half-inch helix coax that's running up there. And as people may know, that's fancy coax, so that's good stuff. We wouldn't need to change that. The third bullet, Dave has done antenna and cable performance measurements, so he has all that data if anybody's interested. And in the end, Hilla really doesn't care about all that. She just wants to measure the output to see if it meets what we describe it. It's going to be. And the thing we would need to do is determine the safe distance for RF reasons for people walking around that roof. At 10 watts, I don't think that should be an issue. Dave didn't think it should be an issue. I just haven't looked on the table yet. You know, the lookup table. But I'll get that. So.
You can almost lick it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Oh, so that's it.
Good.
All right. Sorry about that quick ending. So I got three actions, I think. We're going to address the 10 watts.
I think if we get this set up, it would be fine. But I think if we do successfully, in fact, get it set up and working, mm-hmm. one of the next things to do is to contact
the regional
SCARA. I think it's called SCARA.
Yeah.
Right. The Southern California.
SCARBA, yeah.
Yeah, SCARBA. And see if we can figure out if we want to keep it, if we can get a real pair.
Right.
Because the test pair is okay, but it's not what we want to use for long term.
And we looked into that a little bit. My understanding is the 440 is packed. Mm-hmm. We probably would not get a 440. We might be able to get 145 or 220, which is kind of convenient that the antenna is set up that way. But I agree with you. That's the next step.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. If we have to change bands, that'll be hard because the equipment is tied to the band.
Yeah.
So I think we should do our best effort to get a 440 band.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think in the past, a couple times, one of the things that they said was somebody get a scanner, put in all the repeater frequencies. And then if you hear your scanner lock in on one of those frequencies, you lock that one out. And what your result is after a while is the unused repeater frequencies. And then we can make a petition to take one of those.
Right. Yeah. That sounds like a good process.
I thought the NRR had a repeater directory.
They do. they know what they are, but they're whether they're actually used or not. That's the real question.
Oh, okay.
Like South Bay has a repeater. South Bay Club has a repeater. Yeah. The only time they use it typically is Thursday nights when they have their net call. Mm-hmm. And you can you can talk to those guys and say, hey, do you mind if we put something else up here? And if they say yes, then you go to this Sarba guy.
You should go them there first.
Oh, absolutely.
Club. Yeah, because they're the regional authority for the repeater frequencies.
Okay. Well, the El Segundo guy I talked to said, normally what you do is you talk to a club. If they say, hey, no problem, then the Sarba guy usually says, yeah, you guys agree, no problem. So that's it. Any questions on the line from anybody? So I guess, Kurt, officially, do we have your go to continue?
Yeah, I'm not doing anything, but...
Well, I know, but as a club pres, you really buy in on the plan.
I don't have time to spend on it. If you have time to spend on this project, that's perfectly fine.
Right. All right.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay, I have a little bit more.
I remember a couple several weeks ago you asked about a transmitter in the downstairs room, some kind of B device.
I mean, I found a radio.
Right, it's one of those Bs.
Oh, yes.
Yellow Bs or something like that.
Yes, that is a form of Hunt transmitter.
So it can be turned into a fox, right?
Absolutely right.
It's a fox.
Yep. Yep, and I don't know who owns it, why it's sitting there. Maybe it was Joe's, the guy who passed away.
Where did you find it?
It's sitting in the
A2
on top of the table of the A2 shed.
A2 or A3?
A3, sorry, A3 shed.
Our next event is our next meeting is our Christmas party.
All right.
It will be at the Proud Bird on the 13th. What are we eating?
We are eating exactly the same thing we had last year, which, off the top of my head...
It's the barbecue.
It's the barbecue.
Right? Isn't it going to be a little bit stale by now?
Now, because we got in before the June deadline, we're also going to get, a free upgraded appetizer. And I don't remember what that appetizer is, but I'm pretty sure it's in the contract. So we'll have something a little different than we did last year. I think the minimum party size was 25. So realistically, we should do a quick head count. We should ask folks.
Out of 12:30, is this the REG-EGS summit?
No.
No,
okay. This is the 8 a.m. at your radio club meeting.
All right, so what time are you guys running to?
12:30.
Okay, I'll see you at 12:30.
Okay. Hi.
So my thought was, do a quick head count, and if people want to ask their significant others or whatever to come like last year, we can do that.
Well, I had a question about that. Do you want me, normally for the Christmas party, I don't put it on the slides and stuff, but do you want me to put it on the slide on the Aerospace Digital thing and invite everybody? And,
sure.
Because basically in order to get in, you have to be a member. And so I sit at the door and everybody has to pay up in order to get to sit. I'll make that clear in it, but
yeah,
I think so.
A couple people said, "Hey, are we still on?" I don't think you've sent out an invite yet for the 13th, right?
Not yet.
Yeah. Okay.
So basically, this comes around to our dues, which actually technically were due in October 1st, but we let it slide until December. Here's a review of it. It's $18 for aerospace employees, $24 for you Air Force people because you have to pay more, $12 for retired and family associates, and all that. You don't have to fill it out now. Fill out the form on the website if you have changed your license or other things that you need to update our database are. Go ahead and fill that out. Dues are required to attend the Christmas party, but you don't have to pay beforehand. You just pay at the door. We will have a raffle at the Christmas party. These are a review of our rules that we changed in the recent years. Each person is allowed only to take home one raffle prize. If you win a higher prize, you choose which prize you want to keep. The rejected prizes return to the pool. The ticket prices are 25 tickets for $20. And there's the breakdown. The raffle prizes will be custom gifts or gift certificates to the ham radio retailer of the winner's choosing. The prize amounts are $300, $200, $100, and $450. Other upcoming events, there's actually a new one, an FT8 roundup, if you're into FT8. Huh. That's on December 1 and 2. The 10-meter contest, December 8, is a fun contest. You can do CW or phone. And there's our Christmas party on the 13th. The rookie roundup, I read about that. That looks interesting, where everybody has to try and contact the rookies. And a rookie is if you're new to ham radio in 2016, 17, or 18, the last 3 years, you're licensed in that time, or you've never done CW since the last 3 years, you're then therefore a rookie. And all non-rookies try to work the rookies, and they can only work the rookies, and the rookies try to work everybody.
Tom told me about that for the 10 meter. There was a 10 meter,
and you can do rookie. It on the 10 meter contest.
And it was fun.
CW on
it was
that.
Fun.
There is a TRW swap meet down the street on December 29th. They'll have a VE session then.
What's that?
What?
What is a VE session?
That's where you can upgrade your license, sir.
Ah.
You can become extra or general or upgrade your ham license. There are ham conventions in January in Quartzsite and Yuma in February. That's it.
So there's December 1 and 2 VE session by a local club. I think it was Culver City.
What's
FT8? FT8 is the new digital mode that is sweeping ham radio. Type in WSJT-X in your browser and you'll find the software that needed. And so it's a digital mode that you can communicate around the world, even with the horrible sunspot cycle that we have right now.
Yeah, and it's mostly HF, like 40 meters, 20 meters. I mean, yep. It is on other places, but it's not as common in mm-hmm. the other HF frequencies.
Yep.
And you typically
So it's just for general license, not tech?
You can.
Yeah.
You have to be a general license to do FT8 because most of it's on the HF bands, and it's not in the technician section.
Yeah, they have 10 meter, but I try it every now and then.
No, you can't do 10 meters as a tech, but you can do 6 meters and up. So during the VHF contest or during the 6 meter band openings, sporadic E openings. Yeah. You can see a bunch of FTA signals on 6, and tech can do that there.
Because tech is only voice, right, Ryan?
You can do that. CW on HF.
You can do CW as well on HF.
A little bit.
You can't do digital?
It's not on the
record. I believe they can. I don't think they can do digital on 10.
Okay.
Does that answer
your questions, Judy?
I think so.
Here we go.
Yeah. All right.
Very good.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks, everybody.
See you at the Christmas party.